you're making it hard on me, Mendy. Come on. You lost 7 of 8. I want to talk to you under better circumstances.
What's up, Sal?
How are you, my friend? What's going on?
Here we are, man, grinding, you know. Like you say, hasn't been easy. It's not fun at all, but, you know, we got to keep going. We got to keep finding ways to, you know, turn things around here, you know. And we will, you know. Got a lot of good players. Got to get them going.
How have you handled adversity? You've been dealt it really right from the get-go last year, 0-5. Hey, welcome to managing, right? Managing in New York, big leagues, pressure, all this stuff, 0-5 right out of the gate, not to mention the other issues. You've had other spurts even this year. How have you been able to handle adversity and keep the club in line to where you always respond after these ruts?
Yeah, look, I mean, you just consistency, you know, with the personality, with the coaches, and then the relationship with the players, you know, you keep communicating, keep having conversations with them, keep connecting, getting feedback from players, from coaches, and also understanding that you're going to go through stretches where it's not easy. We haven't been playing well for quite a bit now. We know that, and we're doing everything that we can possibly could be doing right now, looking at everything individually, collectively, to get things going here.
What do you think is the biggest issue with your club right now?
Oh, we've just been inconsistent. We haven't been able to put everything together, you know, whether it's starting pitcher, whether it's offense, you know, defensively, we haven't been able to complete plays in key moments. So we've just been inconsistent overall. You know, it seems like there's days where, you know, we get the big hit with runners in scoring position, which has been a topic. It's been a struggle, you know, pretty much for the most part of the year. Then when we do get the hits, we don't get a quality start, or we make a defensive play. We don't make a defensive play. So we just haven't been able to put a complete game on a consistent basis, and we got to start doing that.
I know you guys were built to be a balanced team, but really the offense, you were built to score a ton of runs. That hasn't happened. Why the inconsistency with the offense this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one there, because when you look at our lineup and when you're looking at our position player groups, it's like, man, that's the quality. And you look at, you know, we can sit here and say, look at the back of the baseball card, look at all the numbers, what they do. But the reality is we haven't been able to put a consistent streak where, you know, hey, everyone is clicking. You know, we could, you know, I feel like there were times where we're talking about the bottom of the lineup. Now we're talking about the top of the lineup. It's just weird, especially when we're talking about guys like Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nemo, who's, you know, they're great players. They're great hitters. And usually, you know, a guy or two will struggle and then the other two will pick the other two up. You know, they went through a stretch where all four of them were struggling, and, you know, it's hard. So I like where Lindor is at for the past 3 or 4 games. Pete is showing, you know, some signs to getting back to his, you know, the way he started it. I like where Soto, the past couple of games, there's some adjustments there with his swings, his setup. So he's taking better swings there. And Nemo's had a couple of tough games this series against the Guardian. But look, man, 1 through 9 or whoever's in the lineup, we got to be better, and we understand that. And like I said, we're doing everything in our power to get these guys going.
Is there something, you think it's a mental thing when you talk about the runners in scoring position, especially with Soto, and we're all just expecting it to click at some point, but is there something that you or Chavez do to try to get them out of the funk or get their mind right? Or you just sit back and say, hey, they know what they're doing, especially with those big four, and leave them alone?
No, we don't ever just sit back and say, oh, hoping that, you know, they're too. No, we're having conversations. We're watching film, whether it's approach, how pitchers are attacking us, or, you know, I mean, Soto in this case that we're talking about. We continue to, you know, dig deep there. He's like, what are we doing, you know? But I know it's about results, but look, man, like, last night's the perfect example. We got bases loaded, one out, Lindor at the plate. He hits a bullet up the middle. It's 1-0-5. And I know that we want results, but what are you supposed to tell the batter? Hey, go get a loop single. You know, it's like, you get a good pitch, you know, you get a good pitch and you hit it hard. After that, it's out of your hand. And that, you know, we saw it last night. Lindor 3 at bat, and I'm not making excuses because, you know, we all want it. You know, we want the results, the players want the results. You know, they, at times they get tired of coming back to the dugout and eight people are telling them, great swing, stay right there. It's like, man, like I want a broken bat single, you know. But how do you do that? You know, like you control, you know, getting a good pitch, putting a good swing, hitting the ball hard. So, you know, it's frustrating at times because, you know, baseball is a crazy sport. But look, man, staying positive, continue to push these guys. And again, we got a lot of good hitters, and this will turn.
We're talking with Carlos Mendoza right now ahead of his game today. Mets, Guardians. Mets looking to salvage the final game of that three-game series. What's the holdup here with McClain and Sproat? I mean, you guys need some length out of your starters. Can we anticipate those guys coming up soon? Where are we at with that?
Yeah, look, man, they continue with their development. They're throwing the ball well in AAA. They continue to make improvement in some of the areas that we continue to ask them. And they're putting themselves in a position where, hey, man, like, we're here. We're watching. But we also got, you know, some arms here that we're counting on them. You know, we build this rotation and guys are healthy now and we need these guys. So it's always good to have those guys there waiting. But at the same time, we're counting on the guys that we got on our current roster.
Well, then how are you going to get length? Because I know Holmes, and I didn't disagree with the decision the other day, taking him out after five innings. Maybe that's what he is at this point. Is Senga more than a five-inning pitcher? Is Manaea at this point? Like, you're up against it here with these guys who you need some length from, Mendy. How are you going to change that?
Yeah, look, man, I mean, every day, every game is different. There's going to be days kind of like last night where I'm going to be more aggressive, especially with the way our bullpen is set up now. Off days around, you know, the schedule. But then we're gonna be facing a stretch here where we're playing 16 in a row and we're going to need the length from them at times, you know. But, you know, the situations, like I said, every game, every day will be different. I thought like last night, we were set up perfectly back there. Play, you know, going 5 innings, 75. It was good. But when you know, first time through the order, he was pretty dominant yesterday. The second time, they made some adjustment, and I just didn't want to take any chances with them facing Clay on a third time through. We had Soto, we had Rogers, we had those guys, and I was aggressive. With Sean was really good the other day for five innings, where it's like, man, 58 pitches, dominating, and then in that one inning got away from him. I feel like Kodai is working through some mechanics issues that he's fixing, and man, he's one of our top guys, so we're going to continue to count on him, and he'll step up. But again, overall, you know, I feel good with the guys that we got here, and I'm pretty confident that they'll take you know, the next step here in the final 2 months and hopefully deep into October.
You guys mentioned that Saturday Montas is going to take he's going to pitch in on his normal day, but he might be behind an opener. How would that help Frankie Montas if you have him behind an opener? Where's your confidence at with him right now?
Yeah, look, man, we just trying to get creative here with him. You know, usually the strategy of an opener is that way the starter doesn't have to face him potentially three times through. So we got an off day before that series and an off day after that series that is going to allow us to be a little bit more aggressive with the bullpen. So, you know, whether it's one time through the order, you let him face that lineup. And depending how he's doing, you want to be more aggressive or not. That's kind of like where we at, but there's also a chance that he starts the game. We got it, you know, we got Kodai starting on Friday, and depending on where we are bullpen-wise, going into Saturday's game, we have that decision.
At what point, Mendy, do you value defense over offense? It feels like right now, whether it's Beatty, whether it's Vientos at third, that's what drove me nuts the other night. Mauricio, to me, is the best defensive third baseman you have. I like the flexibility of having Acuna on the roster. Obviously, he's sent down. Is there a point that you're going to say, you know what, we need to value defense more so than the potential offense in Beatty or Vientos?
Yeah, we value the defense. I mean, that's a huge part of our game and our you know, our team. Like, you know, we got to be able to play good defense behind our pitching staff. I feel like Beatty's been really good defensively. Mauricio, like you say, man, he's been unbelievable. And I'm trying to mix and match here as much as possible. You know, trying to put defenders, trying to create some offense. You know, Acuna obviously wasn't getting playing time here, and we needed him to get playing time. That's why we sent him down. But yeah, it's kind of like a puzzle here that I'm working day in and day out, not only offensively looking what's the best matchup, but putting guys in a position to have success.
How did you set a culture of accountability when you first came over? It's my favorite thing about you. You laid the groundwork right out of the gate. How were you able to do that?
Yeah, look, man, you set out expectations and standards, you know. You start, you know, with a connection and the relationship and just letting the players know what we're here for. You know, you earn the trust from the players, and then when it's time to have those tough conversations, you have them, and they know it's coming from a good place, but also holding each other to high standards, you know, and expectations. And that's what, since day one, with David Stearns, myself, Steve, coaches, and then just the players, especially, you know, from the leadership position, you know, it's like, hey, man, like, there's a way to do things here. Their expectations, their high standards, and we want to hold each other accountable to it.
You have different expectations this year. You guys feeling, is the team feeling any different pressure with the raised expectations versus last year?
I mean, there's always high expectation. It's New York, so you know how it is. Last year, you know, I know outside of this building, people didn't think much of our team, but, you know, we knew we had a good team. And this year it's not different. You know, we added Soto, we added a lot of different pieces, and, you know, our goal is to win a championship. So, you know, there's always expectation. There's high expectations here, and we have to embrace those.
Yeah, I mean, look, and if you don't, you know what's coming your way, Mendy. You're right, it's New York. You're going to get ripped. We got to win this division here. Come on, my friend. We got to get this going.
It's part of it, Saul. I mean, we understand, and that's what, you know, me personally, I love this challenge, especially here in New York. I know we have a passionate fan base. They want results. They care, and they're going to let us know. And, you know, we got to be better. We got to go out there. We understand that we have a responsibility, and we're doing everything in our power to, you know, get through this stretch. And like I said, man, like, I embrace this. It's not fun when you're going through it. It's not easy. But, hey, man, I believe in the guys that we have in this room, players, coaches. We have too much talent here, and I'm pretty confident that things will start turning around here pretty shortly.
Is this one of those where we'll just be happy to get in the postseason, or you want that division?
No, I mean, we're going for the division, Saul. I mean, that's, you know, we're trying to be the best team in the National League. I know we got work to do, you know. We got to go out there, do it. But, yeah, the division, man, that's the goal.
You know, and you mentioned the fans, too, and we'll leave you with this. We do appreciate your time. I know it's game day. You got to get going. We got to get a win here, break this losing streak. But the fans, you know, New York can be tough. It also could be rewarding. You've seen the fans come out in droves. You've got to have had a nice home field advantage. How great has that been to get the support of the fan base this year out at Citi Field?
Yeah, it's great. It's a really good feeling. And even when we're not playing well, we continue to see the support from the fan base. You know, past couple of nights, you know, Monday night, Tuesday night, it's packed house. And it's a good feeling, you know, and that's what I'm going to go back and say, that we have a responsibility here. We got to go out there and we got to, you know, we got to put a show, you know. We got to go out there. We got to compete. And I know, like I said, the players are doing everything that in their power. They're working really hard, and, you know, it'll turn around. But it's definitely a good feeling coming home, playing here in Citi Field. And the expectations is that they continue to support us the last 2 months of the regular season and deep into October.
Hey, King Cohen did his job. You got the horses. You got to go get the job done now. You and these players here, let's finish the job here, Mendy.
That's right. It's on me. It's, you know, I'm the manager. It's on the coaching staff to continue to challenge these guys, push these guys, continue to teach, and get the best out of them. You know, we got to keep it fun while it's hard. But look, I like the way the guys are preparing. We just got to continue to make adjustments and get the results we want.
Yeah, and I believe they will be there as well. All kidding aside, and Carlos, thank you so much for the time. We know you're busy. I appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
All right, man.
Good luck today and the rest of the way. We appreciate it.
All right, man. All right.
There you go. There's Mendy right there. I mean, I feel like we hit him with enough of the stuff that's, you know, relevant right now. Gotten to know Zach a little bit and think you have a fantastic, interesting perspective from a former GM's perspective. Figured to have you on here and have some fun talking about both these two teams. How are you, Zach?
I'm good. Thanks for having me,
Zach. All right, so you want to get into the hard stuff first?
Whatever you want to talk about.
Why did you trade Pete Crow Armstrong? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, he'd fit pretty well right now.
Yes, he would.
I'm sure people are not happy to hear me say that. But, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I grew up learning from people like Theo Epstein, Dave Dombrowski, you know, future Hall of Fame executives, that you kind of figure out who are your core prospects that you think are going to be huge parts of your kind of future, your next great team that you want to build. Everyone wants to build a sustainable winner. And, you know, obviously, incorrectly, he wasn't one of those guys at the time. And a lot of the guys that were are guys that are in the big leagues now. And some of them have disappointed. Some of them have been okay. But, yeah, we had him, and quite honestly, so did the industry, had him probably as, like, our fifth, sixth, seventh best prospect at the time, and what wasn't a deep system. It's fairly top heavy with Alvarez being number one at the time.
And this is your first year there, right?
This is 2021. Yeah, okay, right. I came on first as assistant GM and then slid into
the same year, right? And then yeah. Porter got in trouble. You slid up there.
Yeah, I slid into that seat. And Pete, you know, he had been the first round pick the year before. Loved the defense, loved the speed. You know, we had some questions about the swing. The offense did not see this power coming. And I think that's the biggest thing that, and good for him, that's allowed him to go from, you know, not even being considered a top 100 prospect at that time, to then pretty quickly becoming, you know, a top 20 prospect in the game. And now you see, you know, 4 years after that, he's an all-star and having a great year, and he's a great all-around player. And the biggest thing is, you know, we thought he could be a solid big leaguer, like a high floor because of the defense, and, you know, he's going to get an opportunity because of the defense and speed. Love the makeup too. This kid's great. He would have been great for this market. But, you know, didn't see the power there, so thought like that was someone that, you know, had a more limited upside than he actually did.
And did they want somebody else? Like, did you value holding on to the pitching prospects more so than even a center fielder, which I know is valuable in the game, but in accordance with a pitcher, what were the Cubs looking for in that particular deal?
Yeah, I mean, their focus was really on Matt Allen, and obviously in hindsight, that would have been the player that made more sense to move. At the time, you know, one of the tricky things about coming from the Red Sox to the Mets was just, you know, different perspectives. So at the Red Sox, you know, we didn't have high opinions on Pete Crow Armstrong or Matt Allen in the draft. So I kind of came into it with, like, not that they weren't good players, but just didn't think they were going to be impact players. So I wasn't too high on either one of them. The organization, obviously, they drafted them. People in the organization loved those guys. But yeah, definitely Matt Allen was kind of the guy that people had significantly ahead. To me, I typically do like to prefer to trade pitchers because there's so much more injury risk. But sometimes that's how, you know, in Boston, we got into trouble by almost like undervaluing pitching prospects because they're so volatile. We were really good at developing position players, but struggled for a while. We wouldn't even draft pitchers until, you know, the fourth round. And so we weren't really producing a lot of pitching from internally. So I was going into my Mets experience thinking that and wanting to make sure we still had some good pitchers. And people loved Matt Allen. I mean, people were jokingly kind of saying, you know, you trade him, we're walking out here.
Wow.
Not really seriously, well, okay, but you know what I mean.
And then the other thing about that, not to belabor the point here, but it's an inside look here that I think is a great perspective that you can provide here. Outside of this year's trade deadline, the 2021 deadline, when you made that trade for Baez, that was the most aggressive that the Mets have been in the last several years, going out to getting Baez. How about the thought process behind new owner taking over, feeling pressure to try to win now and be aggressive ahead of that trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was Steve's first year as the owner. He, you know, came as his first press conference said, you know, we want to win a World Series in 3 to 5 years. I thought that we had a really good core of players. So it was more likely we were going to do that on the early end and more unknown on the back end of that 3 to 5 years. So, you know, we wanted to be aggressive. I think people forget we were actually in first place at the time,
yeah,
at the deadline before things really fell apart. We had a ton of injuries leading up to that. So there was, you know, we thought we'd get some guys back that we'd be able to continue. The division was just pretty weak at that point. It's pretty mediocre. The Braves didn't become the Braves until the second half of that. And be as good as they were for a few years. So, yeah, we thought we knew there were some flaws with the team, but we had a really good core of players. A lot of the offensive players underperformed. But we thought, you know, let's be aggressive. And Steve definitely wanted to be aggressive. And that's why we went out and got players that we thought would make an impact. And the players we got all performed very well. But obviously, from a things fell apart. DeGrom got hurt like immediately on trade deadline day.
Right.
You know, we didn't know the extent of it that day because he had been kind of in and out, walking off the mound a few times that year already, and so we weren't sure if it was serious or not. And so the timing's kind of tough because you got to make a call without knowing.
How impactful, BT and Sal, by the way, on the Fan, BT on Vacation, Zach Scott in studio, how impactful do you think that move was as far as the next year, where in 2022 the Mets had a much better team? You weren't there. I know Billy Epler was there, but it seemed like they were reserved. Maybe Cohen didn't want to part with the prospects as much. How much do you think was because of the Baez trade?
I don't know. Obviously, I wasn't there, and I have no knowledge, but it seemed that way from the outside looking in. It seemed like they were gun-shy, right? Like
Cohen aggressive in 2021? Like, was he just sitting back letting you guys go to work?
Well, he was letting us do the work, but, it was clear we wanted to be aggressive. It's still my job in baseball operations. It's our job to, make the right moves within that. Knowing that's the kind of the mandate. He's not saying we should trade this guy or that guy. That's not the level of involvement. But it was clear, we had made a small deal for Rich Hill, and it was pretty clear, we're not just trading for Rich Hill at the trade deadline. We're going to do something impactful.
Were you guys ever at that point thinking extension with DeGrom and or Alonso back when you were there in 2021? I know it's early on, Alonso was a rookie in 2019. Did that conversation ever come up?
So not with Alonso. We did some internal work. We did internal work on everybody. Like, what does a Nimmo extension look like? What does, but as far as conversations with the agent on the other side, we had a conversation with Conforto in spring training, made a significant offer to him. Very fortunate that they turned it down.
Yeah, dude, he turned it down.
He's a Scott Boras client. Scott rarely signs an extension before free agency. I think he wants to get guys to free agency, which usually benefits.
You wanted that, or was that more Alderson?
No, I actually came in really liking Michael. He performed really well for the previous couple of years. He was the right age. He's good quality makeup person in the clubhouse. So, yeah, I thought that made sense. But we knew our offer was not going to be. It wasn't like we made an offer to say we made an offer, but we knew, how Scott operates, that this wasn't going to get it done. So, in hindsight, he may end up making it up or close to it over time, just doing it with a bunch of different contracts. I don't know. He's had a tough go. He's been up and down, and obviously the health was an issue. So, it was him. We were focused on him and Lindor, and obviously got the Lindor deal done. And then, DeGrom, I did have a conversation with his agent. They actually made an offer to us for an extension, which was really not something we were considering. It was essentially what he ended up getting in free agency, so good for them for being able to get it. But given his age and some potential health concerns or some unknowns, at least, we didn't really engage once we got that. We said, I think I countered by saying, here's a concept of something we may consider, but it was just a big gap. So
where are you at with investing in starting pitching overall? We've seen it both aspects here with the Yankees going big on it, whether it's Cole, whether it's Fried, even Rodon. Stearns not going as big, looking more of a bargain there, trying to find some quality in lesser performers and being more cost effective. What would you recommend as a GM?
I mean, pitching's tough. I when you're dealing with free agents, they're usually 30 or older. And those guys, they can fall off a cliff. Elite pitchers do age a little bit better typically, but that's partly because they're coming from a higher place, right? But so I typically like to do shorter deals with pitchers. That was a lot of what we tried to do in Boston some years. But we also went big. We went big on, David Price there. And that is an example of one that we won the World Series, so you can say it worked out, and he was a big part of why we won the World Series in 2018. But the contract, when you look at it by itself, was obviously a bad long-term investment. And they mostly are. When we were working on the Price thing, my role was to lead the analytics group. We were doing some research on it and basically concluded that there's like a 30% chance that this is a fair deal. 70% chance that, underwater.
So most of them are that anyway, but you still have to know that going in.
And I think when you're, that's the luxury you have as a big market team. We did a John Lackey deal. It was pretty long with the Red Sox. At first it looked like a disaster. Then he had TJ, and then he came back and he was great for us and helped us win a World Series in 2013. So It's tough because you want impact pitchers. Ideally, you're developing them yourself or acquiring them via trade, like we did with Chris Sale, like the Red Sox just did with Garrett Crochet. I think that's the way to go, is to try to, you want guys in their 20s. I mean, that's, pitchers peak even earlier than position players because of the health concerns. So it's hard, but when you're a big market team, you can afford to take bigger gambles as long as the rest of your roster makes sense. So for example, David Price, that year we had a really young core of players with Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley and Andrew Benintendi. And those guys were making, because of the structure of the first 6 years of the system, they're making a lot less than what they're producing. So you can balance out what you expect to be a significant overpay in an older free agent. You hope you get that impact up front, but you can balance that out because you have guys that are, you know, quote unquote underpaid because of the way the system works. So you have Mookie Betts getting paid, you know, producing twice as much value or more than what he's getting paid. So you kind of have that balance. Where it gets risky, and I think the Yankees are kind of an example of this, is when you start paying multiple guys these big deals, and now you have a lot of guys in their 30s, and does it all kind of come to a head where you've just killed your flexibility? I mean, financial flexibility is a huge thing, even for big market teams, because big market teams just tend to spend more. So, you know, you're still limiting your flexibility, whatever your budget is. So having a bunch of guys that can't pitch for you because they're injured, because they're all, you know, 34 or at some point, that's highly risky. And they've done it a few times with some big long-term deals. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
BT and Sal in studio here with Zach Scott, former general manager of the Mets. One thing that I liked about you in your short time with the Mets is that I felt like you held guys accountable. You weren't afraid to say what was on your mind. Maybe there were some repercussions of that we could get into. But you see the Yankees, like, for me, it's a culture issue, lack of accountability that probably starts from the top on down. What are you seeing from a GM perspective? What's going on with the Yankees?
Well, first of all, I have so much respect for Brian Cashman. I know from living around here the last 4 years, there's a lot of people that complain about Cash. But someone that's worked in the industry, to have the level of success, and I know in New York, if you don't win a World Series, it's kind of seen differently, but to never have a losing season, right? Like, I don't think he ever has.
No, they've been, yeah, on a sustained
run. And he's been
like
there
like
almost 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable. So I think people that have been in roles like myself in the industry just have so much respect for Cash because of that's the hardest thing to do.
With that payroll, though?
Even with that payroll, because their advantage early on was much bigger, and now it's kind of
right.
It's shrunk because more teams have been able, or have for whatever reason, been investing more. So
right, but then they haven't had as much success as they did early on.
And that makes it harder because they didn't, as those teams started spending more, they didn't necessarily go up to some huge level to separate again like they used to be separated from the pack 20 years ago. So that's the first thing I'll say. But I will say, you know, one of the interesting observations since being out of the daily grind of baseball and doing, you know, being kind of in and out of it through consulting now, is observing the way the teams have carried themselves. And, you know, I think going back to when Cash had, I think it was the GM meetings where he kind of
went off on
the media and was
defending
dropping
his
F-bombs and things like that, which I loved. It was fun and entertaining, and it's good to see that sometimes. But he's one of the few guys that could do that. But I think ever since then, and some of the things, and I don't know Aaron Boone. I have a lot of respect for him, and I know people who love him. So, you know, I do think highly of him. But I will say some of the public rhetoric from these guys has been a little defensive, I guess is the word that comes to mind, or just kind of playing things off. And I'm sure that's more just outwardly and not necessarily representative of the conversations inwardly, but they're a little related. So as to your point, you know, the year I was there, Steve definitely, you know, he called the team out on Twitter at least once. You know, I did a little bit, and like you said, there were some repercussions. I probably said a little too much.
Players took issue with you, or was it upper management?
Well, no, players, because, you know, there was one time I was asked a question. We had so many injuries that year, and someone, I think, you know, the Mets history, there's a lot of bashing of trainers and medical staff and their history, and a lot of the people that were there were really good at what they do, and they weren't the same people. So it seemed unfair to to be taking shots at them. So when I was asked about the training staff, like, do you think this is a problem with them and not? And I said, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into injuries. And I listed trainers, strength and conditioning. I listed all these things. And when I said, you know, players also, you can set plans for players, but they got to stick to it. And I didn't mean that as our players are, you know, not doing what they're supposed to do. But at times, yeah, there are lapses in that. There's always been that. And every team I've been with, is not every guy follows everything perfectly. They have other people in their ear sometimes that aren't associated with the team telling them to do different things. And so there were a couple instances where guys, you know, we had a bunch of soft tissue injuries, a lot of dehydration that year. And it was like, those are preventable. So there was a little frustration that, yeah, that's part of it. It's like, guys, you got to show up for treatment. You got to get, you know, hit the massage table. If you're having these issues, you got to make sure you're hydrated. And some guys had some issues that year. So that was one of like 10 things I listed. As soon as I said it, I knew, well, that's the one thing people are going to jump on because it's about the players. Immediately after that media availability, I went down to the clubhouse to talk to Louis Rojas, who's the manager at the time, and said, hey, I need to get ahead of this because I'm sure some guys aren't going to be happy with it because however it gets relayed, this game of telephone, they may misinterpret what I meant. So I explained, a leadership group that we kind of picked guys that represented, you know, the bullpen, the rotation, the infield, a catcher, an outfielder. And I got that group together and just kind of explained, you know, why I said this and what I meant. And I just didn't want it to get twisted. And they were like, they had already known about it. That's how fast it traveled from the time to go from the media room to the clubhouse. And I think it was good that we could kind of just clear the air. I'm sure some guys were still kind of annoyed because we weren't playing well. And that's what happens at the time is people are going to get a little sensitive and frustrated sometimes.
And I myself like the honesty from you there. All right.
Feels like a day, or the day is coming soon, that Steve Cohen is going to have to go back to his X account and put something out. You know, he usually, when things are going really well or really bad, he'll put something out. And the last time he put something out was July 12th. And this obviously was after a big inning, and they scored 7 runs in the 8th and 9th, actually. He goes, there seems to be less complaining after the team scored 7 runs in the 8th and 9th. Funny how that happens. Like, come on, Steve.
I mean, Steve, you're a fan.
Right.
You have to know about the Met fan base. I know you're trying to he's changed the culture significantly. He's spending the money. He's doing everything that I think we would all want him to do. But, you know, when that money being spent is being spent in the wrong place, whether it be on Scherzer and Verlander, and now, you know, you got $765 million invested in one player. You know, that one player is not living up to what everybody wants him to be. Now, all of a sudden, you have issues. And, you know, they're still very much in it. And I'm not worried about them as much as I am about the Yankees.
But, sure. But
I do think that when they get to September and October, then that's really when Juan Soto's going to have to earn his keep.
Well, yes, and hopefully there is a long October or even an opportunity to play in October. And this does feel like a Steve Cohen's got to come in and settle everybody down type of thing because a fan base loves him, wants to hear from him. You know, we're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. You know, Phillies are now 3 games up and a loss in the division. This feels like one of those times. I would not be surprised after like a month, well, not quite a month, that he has not sent anything out, that he's going to send something out in the next couple of days. Lance in Texas, what's going on, Lance?
Hey, Gio, thanks for taking my call, gentlemen.
Yeah.
I know what's wrong with Juan Soto. I know why he's broken. Mm-hmm. What was his all-consuming motivation that drove him the first 6-7 years of his career?
Well, listen, it's obvious to say, hitting free agency, and, you know, he got a bunch of offers prior to free agency he turned down, obviously wanted to hit free agency, and hit it at 26, which he did, and cashed in. So, I mean, that's probably the answer you're looking for.
Yes, and I don't think he's motivated. I mean, what is it that's motivating now? Because he doesn't care about winning. He's got a World Series. He doesn't care about the fans. He doesn't care about the city. He doesn't care that he was in the greatest situation he could have been in Yankee Stadium, hitting ahead of Aaron Judge, in the most storied franchise. He was set up, but his greed. And now, I don't think he's motivated. I don't think he cares.
Yeah, I mean, Lance, that's a tough thing to say. I mean, and the motivation is that and I would imagine that anybody who's as intense as he can be, had the success that he's had, wants to make sure that he doesn't look like one of the bigger free agent busts ever, which is what he would be if this contract ends up being something that, you know, the Mets look back on and say, I can't believe they gave this guy all that money because he's been a mess. There's a different type of pressure. There's a pressure to play well when you're trying to get the contract, and there's a pressure to live up to the contract.
Well, let me take you back 2 years ago, because the same thing happened with Francisco Lindor, and things were not going well for him. And then all of a sudden last year, the second half of the season, he caught fire and he ended up becoming a leader, so much so that everybody thought that they were going to give the captaincy to him and transfer it from David Wright, which they did not do, by the way. So all of this right now for Juan Soto is he cares. He wants to win. He wants to win a World Series. I mean, I would think that any player, especially the amount of money that they're paying him, is going to want to live up to that contract. He is not, I don't think he's dogging it at all. And I think what this is going to come down to for all of us is going to be when they make the playoffs and how his performance impacts the team in the big spots in the playoffs, much like it did for Francisco Lindor last year and how all of a sudden he became a beloved player here.
Yeah, and I mean, Juan Soto in a Yankee uniform hit their biggest home run of the postseason, you know, putting them into the World Series. So, and then he left.
But I know,
he needs to have 10 of those examples as a Met.
But for these guys, 162 games, you got to keep a level head. I mean, I know the Yankees are trying to do that. I know that Aaron Boone is trying to do that. They got to get out of the malaise. So do the Mets. They all, you know, they have expectations that they're going to make it. You just can't be complacent and think that just because you have all these great guys in the lineup, that all of a sudden it's going to happen. You got to go out and perform. And in the last, you know, since the trade deadline, it has not went well for either team. So they have to get out of this. Both teams need to win today. But if they don't win today, it's not going to end tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just going to continue on until we get there. And when we finally get there, we can reflect back on these terrible months of baseball that both teams have played. And that if they do get it to the playoffs, then all of that's going to be forgotten. And it all starts anew. And that's when you can start creating the new memories that, you know, players have done so many times here. We've seen it many times for both teams. It is horrendous. And I keep hearing from Mendoza talking about how good his team is, how good his team is. Well, you know what? I don't know. Maybe that when they're practicing or they're meeting, they're good, because when they get on the field, they basically look flat.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why this team looks flat, because we talked about this yesterday with Gio. They're selling. They're getting big crowds. They're not selling out every. The crowds are great. The fans are into it. But for some reason, something is missing. And I don't know what that is. And I know everybody's waiting for the big outburst. I thought they had the outburst over the weekend. But that, you know, that led to nothing. And then, you know, for this team, and it's embarrassing. Now, I don't care what anybody says, getting one hit. And quite frankly, you know, there was a chance yesterday that when Juan Soto hit that ball, that he might have been thrown out at first base if it doesn't go out of the building.
You know,
because he's loafing out of the box. Now, I don't expect him to sprint to first base in a situation like this, but he watched the whole thing and
it gets out by literally a foot.
By a foot, and uh-huh. It's back in. And you know what? This to me is like and he's got a nice smile on his face, you know, like he's laughing. You know, I'm sick of it. I want to see attitude. I want to see, you know, when the Mets had Gary Carter, they had Ray Knight, they had, you know, they had guys that would fight. You know, they would go on losing streaks too, like every baseball team does. But I don't ever, and maybe I'm forgetting things, but there were times where these guys would be fighting each other. They were fighting.
They're punching Eric Davis in the face on third base.
Right, exactly.
In Cincinnati. I
mean, and, you know, this team looks, you know, this team looks overpaid and underwhelmed.
They look bored. And that's a bad place to be. And I'm glad you brought up Soto. I was going to get to him, but since you mentioned the home run and watching the replay on a closer view, maybe it was more than a foot. It was a 3 or 4 feet up, but your point is well taken. Steven or Andrew, whoever is back at CBS Sports Network, can you, if possible, can you get me the RBI triple by Arias in the sixth inning? Because just to set this up, so David Peterson, who was okay, gave up a couple of, you know, the home runs, made it 3-0. Then he goes out there in the sixth inning, and the two out. You can't walk a guy with two outs.
Well, we all know that.
He walks Carlos Santana, but I don't know. Watch this. Watch Soto in right field. Number one, lollygagging to the ball here, fumbles it. Watch this throw. What is that? He gives the guy the extra base, making it a triple instead of it. Like he's
Arias.
What is that?
Arias was the MVP of the series.
He was just killing them. But to your point about Soto, like even the lob throw in.
It's amazing.
I don't want to say there's no effort. There's not much effort on that play.
I want to say this, and I'm going to say it again. There's not a player worth $765 million.
No, there's not. There's no question.
I mean, you know, maybe Shohei Ohtani because he does so many different things, and he basically steals bases. You know, and I know Juan has stole some bases this year, but you know, is he a leading like your highest paid player, whether it be Aaron Judge or Shohei Ohtani or in this case Juan Soto, has to lead the team.
Yep, I agree.
They have to set the example, and when the example that is being set is one that just doesn't look, at least to the naked eye, and as a former athlete, looks to me like if that's the guy that's getting paid $760 million and he's supposed to be our leader, I'm not following that guy.
Not to mention, he's been the word that I've heard a lot, and it's so right. His numbers ultimately will look fine, but it's a whole lot of nothing.
Well, his last 3 weeks he's been abysmal.
Terrible.
Since the All-Star break, he's been abysmal.
But do you realize he's got 26 home runs? If I asked you right now how many of them are more than a solo shot, how many do you think? Because I don't know if
probably
people...
Six.
He's got 20 solo home runs. Now, you want to tell me a solo home run, it's 2-2 in the ninth inning. Great. That impacts a game. That's a huge hit.
That's a clutch hit.
But a solo home run in the ninth inning to break up a no-hitter when you're losing 4-0 is useless.
And this craze about, you know, Pete Alonso beating Daryl Strawberry. We get stuck on so many stupid things. Like, they have to win. They're spending $400 million on their team, and they're not dealing with injuries. Maybe Francisco Lindor is dealing with a toe injury.
It seems like it.
All right, so then don't be out there.
Well,
I mean, like, I love the fact that you want to play, and I don't know if this is true. If it is true that he is hurt and it's costing them, and he is not hitting, and he's striking out at an alarming rate, then you got to sit him down. I mean, like, the Yankees sat down Aaron Judge.
I think the time was right for that. I think at this point he's starting to hit. Even like his first at bat yesterday was a screaming line drive.
Yeah,
but the last few days he's hitting the ball better and is starting to look better. So I think you were right. Maybe 2-3 weeks ago they should have it. They didn't. I think he's coming back into focus. But that said, this team looks live. And I know when you're not winning, it looks this way, and maybe it's not. But they look
Jerry,
lifeless.
Your $765 million man is not leading by the front. I can tell you that.
I couldn't agree with you more.
He is setting an example that, and I'm sure he's popular in the locker room. And I'm sure, you know, the fact that his family's got a suite and it's got all the trappings of being the superstar, that the way they treated Bonds, the way they treated Rodriguez, the way they treated, you know, McGuire, the way they treated Sosa, you know, they treated those guys like, you remember Barry Bonds had two lockers.
I do.
You know, swivel chairs and everything else like that. And when you make this kind of money and you put forth what seems to be a very average effort,
yeah,
I don't care. I mean, it's just, it's ugly. Absolutely ugly. And it's we could sit here and say it's unacceptable, but what are you going to do about it?
Nothing.
Especially when Mendoza is after the game going, well, you know, went over his head, you know, I'm good with that. And I'm like, we see it a different way. And I know these managers are not going to be able to scream and yell at these players.
I don't think they're allowed to. I really don't.
I mean, at the end of the day, the player has got to have the pride to want to live up to what he has accomplished. Like, he's accomplished so much in his young career, and he's got so much more to accomplish. And the fact that he is really being paid this much money, and it has been, like, this absent and looks the way that he does, is an insult to everybody who pays $50 to $150 to $350 a ticket to go and see it.
Couldn't agree with you more.
That is to me the ultimate insult.
Kick in
the
face.
Fan. Right.
I agree. And that's why. So I was out yesterday for much of the day. I had this game. I recorded it. So when I went back and watched it, I watched this play like 8 times. Like, I couldn't believe the laziness and the just blah. There was no urgency. You know, we talk a lot about urgency when a team is struggling. There was no urgency on that plane. It almost just kind of was like a microcosm of what they or he is doing right now. And it's just, you know, and for them to get out of this. Now, listen, the same way they were struggling and they won 7 in a row, they can do that again. Cleveland had lost. Think about this. The Guardians had lost 10 straight games, and since then they're 18-7. They've turned things around. They're back in the at least wild card chase.
And think about the Guardians for a minute, and think about the crap that they've had to deal with. Their closer
about
is
Emmanuel
suspended.
Class A suspended. Yeah.
I mean, like for gambling. I mean, and how are they doing what they're doing? And, you know, it's a small market team. It's
none of that
by
matters.
Chernoff. I mean, but you know, they usually are in the middle of it. It just goes to show you, it doesn't matter how much money you spend, you're going to get your asses kicked if your leaders are not leading by the front.
So
and they are trailing, and I don't know what else to tell you. You know, Lindor is in a slump, Alonso's in a slump. Worried about I don't know him in particular, but all we're talking about is breaking Darryl Strawberry's home run record for the Mets like it's some a matter of importance.
All right, if I ask you right now, though, I mean, you're right. Lindor, Soto, Alonso, all that's true.
McNeil, Nimmo.
Who is hitting? I mean, I'm looking at the order from yesterday. Mark Vientos, he almost had a base hit. He almost had a hit. But he was 0-for-4 yesterday. Brandon Nimmo, all right, he walked 3 times. Great. But he has not done much of anything lately.
As good as a hitcher.
Jeff, yeah, but he's done much of nothing. Jeff McNeil, anything?
I don't know. Maybe he's worried about the golf course.
The catcher position. Have you gotten it? Like,
when Alvarez came back, he was better. But now all of a sudden, nothing. Yeah.
Top to bottom, this has been a collective fail offensively. And it's, you know, we sit here in March and April, oh, this team, this lineup. Remember, Ron Darling was on with UNG. He said they are going to score a million runs. And I think both of you were like, really? Like this lineup? And I understand why he says that when you see the names Lindor, Soto, Alonso. I get it. But they got to go out there and do it. And there are times they look like one of the worst teams in baseball. And right now is one of those times.
Yeah, well, not as so. There's different ways of looking. So when the Yankees are making all of their mental errors and their physical errors in the field and base running gaffes, I mean, that's one thing. That and then we hear about Eric Bolin talking about the organizational problems that they have down in the minors when Didi Gregorius comes back and says you can't believe that they're not teaching the fundamentals down there. It's all about exit velo and all this other crap. I mean, I just want to see effort. I want to, you know, manufacture a run. Somebody's trying to get on base and bunt. You know, this is one of these getaway days where everybody's swinging at everything. Now, hey, give Gavin Williams a lot of credit. He was great yesterday.
I know the fact he did not want to come out of that game. That's amazing.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him. But I don't care that they're going to play the Brewers. What I do care about is that they're leaving New York. They're getting away from the boos. I mean, they're being booed at home.
Yeah, after being so
dominant. $400 million roster is being booed at home.
And they should for this week. Think of how dominant they were at home for the first 3 months of the season and where we are right now.
Oh, I think back to those earlier days in the season where, you know, you have the post-game interview with the player of the game. And, it's so great to be here. The fans are behind us. We love you guys. You know, we appreciate everybody's, you know, taking part. I mean, this really, honestly, is so hard to watch. I don't even want to watch it.
All right, so I'm going to bring.
I don't even want to watch it. I mean, like now, I will say this: they go away to Milwaukee for 3 games, and I don't care how good Milwaukee's playing. Maybe that's what the Mets need. Maybe they need to play against a good team, and maybe they need to wake up away from home because then they come back home against Seattle and Atlanta and Seattle. What is that 6-game homestand going to be like?
It might be 1-5, might be 6-0.
But how are the fans going to react?
They'll be
to
there.
That?
Well, how do they play in Milwaukee? If they go win 2 out of 3 against Milwaukee and they play the right way and they look more the part, I think the fans will be there and they'll be fired up. If they go get swept, you're going to hear boos in the first inning.
You know, normally I don't get too like wrapped up in all of this stuff, just simply because it's a long season and we've seen teams turn it on. Mid August into September, and then all of a sudden they get themselves right and they're ready to go for the playoffs. And maybe you're right, Jerry. Maybe they're bored. Maybe they're expecting to be in the playoffs. Maybe they think just showing up is going to get them back to where they were last year. Well, we know every year is different. This is why when you listen to the Philadelphia Eagles, you listen to Saquon Barkley, Jalen Hurts, you listen to A.J. Brown or Nick Sirianni, they tell you that, you know, it was great to win Super Bowl 59, but, man, that's in a rearview mirror. This is a new year, and we got to do it all over again, and we got to put in the effort to be able to get back there. It's not easy.
I got to get something off my chest, Deke.
Go ahead.
And I want to be calm when I say this. So I love fans. I'm a fan. We're all fans. And we love sports. I love sports. We love sports. And so yesterday afternoon, because the Yankees had a day game, I was lucky enough to take my 4-year-old son, Spence, and even my wife to the Mets game against the Guardians. And
almost
saw history, Teague. Absolutely. And we'll talk about the Met issues coming up, I promise. But I'm watching this near no-hitter. I'm explaining it to my son, who had zero interest in it until the ninth inning. He's 4. Mm-hmm. He was distracted by everything else. And I'm disgusted like every other Met fan. I wasn't booing, but there was a lot of booing yesterday afternoon. Fine. I'm not going to lecture people about that. But here is what really pissed me off. And it's almost been 24 hours, and I got to get over it, but I'm still angry at my fellow Met fans. That's right. I'm angry at my fellow Met fans. When Gavin Williams, the pitcher for the Guardians, gave up the home run to Soto, stayed in the game, issued a walk, got an out, and was pulled, okay, with 2 outs in the ninth inning, he got a standing ovation from Met fans.
What's wrong with that?
What's right with that,
Teague? Don't you get to appreciate a potential near greatness for a team that just doesn't have no hitters? Their last no-hitter was like 25, 35 years ago.
You think that means a lot to me?
I mean, it should.
I'm a Met fan.
Actually, I think it's more. I think it's like 44 years ago.
1981, Len Barker, perfect game. Yes, it was a long time ago.
A long time ago.
Why do I care about that?
I don't know. You shouldn't. But when you're in the midst of like abject mediocrity, because it's not just regular mediocrity. This is like abject mediocrity.
They went 13 innings without a hit. Yes.
13 innings without a hit. Yeah. And this is 8 losses out of your last 9. You get swept by the Cleveland Guardians. It just feels like, ugh, we're at the low of the low. This is the nadir of this streakiness that I talked about a week ago. You win 7 in a row, then you lose 8 of 9. Like, this is the bottom. And so when you're at the bottom, where else are you going?
Cheer the opponent?
No. It's like, where are you going? You're not going farther down. You're just kind of, you know what? That kid actually is pretty good.
No.
Let's give him a little standing ovation.
No.
We appreciate it. Because I know, and I only know this because I'm not a Met fan, but I am in a Met chat with me and Chad. Or Chad and me.
Yes.
Sorry. So,
yes.
I get it.
Yeah.
I could feel the shift happening. Because originally it was, are you kidding me? We're going to get freaking no hit? This is horrible. To the end, it was like, I'm kind of rooting for this.
Okay, there are two things.
I kind of want to see this,
Tiki,
because it will make me feel better about my pain.
You,
like, when you're in pain, it almost feels better to have more pain because it negates the pain. That's what I felt like was happening with the Mets.
You aren't wrong. So there were two things that happened yesterday, and there were 40,000 people there, so I am not alone in being in the building and experiencing this. There were some Met fans who wanted them to get no hit because of the rock bottom nature of what it would mean.
Yes.
Okay?
That's what I felt. I'm not a Met fan, but yeah, that's what I felt.
There are people who felt that way. And in my Mets text chat that you're referring to, that you're a part of, absolutely, there are Met fans who yesterday said, you know what? F you guys. This is so bad and pathetic. I hope you get no hit. That's one group of people. Yes. The other group of people who were cheering are not those people. The people that were cheering were like, yay, I almost saw a no-hitter. Yay. Who cares if it happened at the expense of my team? I don't feel that way. Bro, I went to Chris Heston's no-hitter. What does that mean? That's when a giant pitcher pitched a no-hitter against the Mets in 2016. It was my dad's first and only no-hitter. First and only. These guys watch thousands of baseball games. He has never seen a no-hitter in person. Do you think for a second he cheered? That no-name pitching a no-hitter against his team, no way. No way.
Right.
So this is nothing personal to Gavin Williams or anybody else. But if you're in that building and you're a Met fan, you're appreciating his greatness. Since when do we do that? Since when do we say, oh, you know, they're a cheater. He kicks the Mets' ass. Let's give him a standing ovation. What kind of losers are we?
I don't think
that we're cheering the opponent.
Okay. How many people were there last night?
40,000, bro.
40,000 people. How many of them are the regular 40,000 that go to all the other important games?
I don't know.
Probably not a lot.
Okay.
I'm gonna say big camp day.
I'm gonna say it's half. Maybe half. Most people are on vacation. I'm supposed to be on vacation. I should be in Cape May. Guess what? My kids have cheer practice. So who gets to come back and bring the kids to cheer practice while Tracy stays down at the beach? That would be me. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to come back up and go to work. That's how it is. Some people are just there because, you know what? I can't go regularly. But now I'm going to go to a baseball game. It's a beautiful Wednesday afternoon. The Mets, there's tickets available because people aren't going. They're going to the beach. They're doing other things.
Oh, they are going. They got 40,000 people there.
How many of them are the regular 40,000?
I don't know that.
I'm trying to explain to you why the lay fan, who's not the diehard like you are, sees this. They never get a chance to really see this, and they appreciate it. That's all it is.
Okay, so I want to bring up an example. You know Mark Melusis?
Of course I do.
Love Mark Melusis. And I've told this story to Moose before, so this isn't going to, you know, catch him from afar. Mm. But years ago, Mark did a show here on WFA, and I was listening. And it was right after the Mets stopped Chase Utley's 35-game hit streak. He had a 35-game hit streak in 06. Mm. So keep this in mind. 2006, we are not blood rivals yet with Chase Utley. He's a young player.
Right.
So don't give me this, he maimed Ruben Tejada. That would happen a decade later. And Mark Melusis was mad at Met fans for cheering the end of Chase Utley's hit streak. And I'm like, excuse me? Of course we're cheering the end of his hit streak. Screw him. He's not on the Mets. And Moose had this debate with callers all day. Great radio, by the way. That's why I commend him. He got me pissed off. Saying Met fans were not being classy. We should have cheered Chase Utley. We shouldn't have booed him. Mm. We should have appreciated his bid for greatness. The Met fan in 2006 was right. The Met fan in 2025, to cheer a guy who most of you may have heard of, but you're not that familiar with, pitching a near no-hitter against our pathetic team? No!
So what's happened? What's happened?
I don't know. I don't have an answer other than it bothered me.
Well, fandom has changed is what's really happened.
Is that what you think?
Of course it is.
You think we're different?
You can see it. People aren't as vicious. Philadelphia, other than, say, the crazies on Sunday afternoons for the Eagles, Philadelphia is not as crazy as it used to be.
Yeah.
Say for FOMO Cheeks, who almost tried to beat up Sean. But, like, most of the Philly fans, as crazy as we want to say they are, they're kind of, like, chill. Right? You see them every now and then, and it's kind of like, unless they're at a game and maybe a little inebriated, they're not really vicious. They're just kind of, like, fans, they're happy.
I don't want to be vicious, though. I don't understand why we got to give an opponent a standing ovation.
The fan is different.
I don't like
it. The fan is different.
Okay, I don't like it.
So, you know what? I'm going to guess, let's say less than a third, but probably like, I don't know, a tenth maybe. A tenth had that guy on their fantasy team.
Oh, God.
And they were like, hell yeah. I mean, I'm joking, but you never know. So I think the appreciation or the ire from the fan for, like, the bottom that you find yourself in is not the same that it used to be 15, 20 years ago.
But the ire was shown throughout the day when Juan Soto was booed and Francisco Lindor was booed.
That was ire at the Met player.
So why are we giving love to an opponent who did it?
Because you can't just give hate and negativity to everybody.
I'm not saying
you gotta appreciate the good thing that happened yesterday.
It's not a good thing.
It was a good thing for Gavin Williams.
I'm not a Guardian fan. No one. Well, there were a few Guardian fans there, but most people there are not Guardian fans. I don't care about the good thing he did.
Sportsmanship, Evan.
Sportsmanship. I have.
It's one of 162. Hopefully it doesn't matter in the bigger picture. So you appreciate it in the smaller picture. That's what this is.
I appreciate great things in baseball. I think you know that about me.
Of course I do.
And while I may appreciate greatness, one thing I will never do is stand up and show that appreciation. And I have to admit, so I was sitting in section 122, which was field level last row. It's my go-to when I don't have my tickets. Right. I didn't have my tickets yesterday. And so why I describe that is everyone was in front of me. I was in the last row of a section. So I got to see the rise of asses and people as Gavin was coming out of the game. And I'm so annoyed. I turned to my wife to complain about it. And what is my wife doing?
She's standing and cheering.
Yes!
Of course, because she appreciates it. She's not the diehard. You ever watch boxing? Like, and these guys are just bludgeoning one another, just blow after blow, especially these good fights. And it's uppercut and it's body blow. And it's like, oh, man, one of these guys is going to die. And then afterwards, one of them guys wins. The other guy gives him a hug, pats him on the back. Great competition. It was awesome.
Yeah.
The thrill of the competition.
Yeah.
The battle that happened in the ring. It's the same thing. As a fan, you watch something great.
I don't see it.
Right. It's why, look, I know this because I'm not a Met fan, but this is why I like watching sports.
I respect that.
Because I want to see something great.
Totally get it.
And you usually don't.
Yes.
Most times you don't. Most times you see bad and ugly and error and everything else. But when you get that rare opportunity to see something great, even if it's not your team, and maybe this helps because I'm not a Met fan, but mm-hmm. still, even when it's not your team, how often do you get to see almost great?
No, very rarely.
Very rarely.
I admit
and so
that.
When you see it, you appreciate it. And that's why the Met fan got up
you
and
cheered. You can appreciate it without cheering an opponent in your own building.
Okay, but you can't show him that you appreciate
it
unless
you do
that.
Why do I have to show him anything? I don't have to show Gavin Williams anything.
You're being a meathead Met fan. That's exactly what you're doing. You're being a hater.
Guardian.
Don't hate on that Gavin Williams just because he's for the opponent.
I'm not hating on Gavin Williams. I'm hating on us as Met fans for standing up and cheering him 20 minutes after we were booing everyone on our team mm-hmm. because we're disgusted by the offense.
Right, because you're done with your offense.
So instead, after
you were probably done with your offense a week and a half ago.
Well, look, the offense has been dreadful. It's the reason they're in the situation they're in. It's the thing that should scare you the most about this team, which we will discuss throughout the day at 888-808-1019. But what I can't do, and I think I've been very consistent about this, whether I was a teenager or I'm a grown man, is I never cheer the opponent. Mm. When Mark McGwire's hitting home runs off the scoreboard and the rest of you guys are like, I didn't cheer him. When Chase Utley struck out in the ninth inning against Pedro Feliciano and his hit streak ended, I wasn't like, oh, great job, Chase. I'm so proud of you. BS. And so, yes, I'm mad at the Mets, and we'll talk about all their issues, but I'm mad at you people. And if you were in the building yesterday and you stood up and you cheered this guy, explain yourself, because I don't like it. I know you're on my side on this one, Sean.
No, I would have cheered, even if that was happening to the Yankees. Yes, I would have.
That is such crap.
No, it's not. There's a difference here. You got to realize he did not throw the no-hitter. If the game ended with him throwing a no-hitter and every Met fan in that building or non-Met fan or Met meathead in that building rose to their feet and gave him a standing ovation for no-hitting their team, I think that is a major problem.
Well, why is it okay to cheer the effort but not cheer the completion?
Because you know what? You breathe the sigh of relief that he didn't, in fact, totally embarrass your team. Mm. You have your problems with your team anyway. And on a Wednesday afternoon, where everybody entered that ballpark to be entertained, the Mets did not entertain them. They got out of it 4-1 by the time Williams walks off. And for those 2 hours, the entertaining part of their afternoon was that this nameless, faceless pitcher from a nameless, faceless organization, it's not a Philly, not a Brave, not a Yankee, not a Dodger, twirled one of the great pitching efforts in Major League Baseball this year, and they cheered the idea that they, at least, while they can't have their own team help them out, got some entertainment and satisfaction out of this guy.
You know what's interesting, Sean? I just realized it might have been relief.
Yeah, it could be too, yeah.
You're cheering relief.
I don't think you're cheering that after the actual no-hitter. You're pissed off that your team got embarrassed.
Right.
That was gone.
It was relief. It was like, oh man, we're not going to be another note in Cleveland history because they haven't thrown a no-hitter. Right. Since May 15th, 1981. And that was a perfect game. Right. Len Barker.
Yeah.
They haven't thrown a no-hitter since then. So you could have been plastered in Cleveland history.
And
now you weren't. So you're like, whew.
And
good job,
poor
Gavin. Thanks for not fully embarrassing us.
Tiki, you and I like to, you know, indulge in the alcohol at a baseball game, unlike Gavin, who scores everything.
Give me tall boys.
A game like that yesterday, if it's 4-1 and then Soto Homer came in the third inning, that is as boring a day baseball game as anybody could attend in a million years.
Great point.
They were on the edge of their seat for 8.5 innings, waiting with bated breath for a hit, and then they didn't have the relief. They cheered the entertainment factor. This guy who doesn't matter in Mets history didn't no-hit him, but you know what? He gave him a fun afternoon.
Yeah, I was miserable. I hated it. I hated every second of it. And as we were getting closer to the no-hitter, and my wife was there, like I said, and my four-year-old was there, my wife says to me, do you want to see it? I said, do I want to see it? No. And then she said, what about Spence? I said, well, what do you mean, what about Spence? He doesn't know what's going on. I'll explain it to him. And I did. But she says, don't you want to see it for him?
Mm.
And I said, no.
It took me
until I was 30 to see a no-hitter.
Did you explain it to him as it was happening?
I was. I'll tell you his answer. My dad saw one, and he's been on the planet for over 70 years, and you'll appreciate this, Sean, and you, T. You both appreciate this. I didn't want to deal with Jet being jealous that Spence saw the no-hitter and he didn't.
That's your best amazing. Point.
That's amazing.
I don't want to deal with it.
Like, Dad, Spence doesn't even care.
Mets suck.
Well, I did it in the ninth inning as the inning was starting. Because here's the way it works when I take my kid to my four-year-old to a game. I get through the first few innings, he's interested.
Yep.
Then I go to Kitty Field. Then I get the ice cream. By about the seventh inning, I go to the closer. The closer is the tablet. And I admit, it's a cheat code, and I don't like to use it unless I have to. So seventh inning, here comes the closer.
I hope the tablet's not Devin Williams quality.
So he's on the tablet. I take the headphones off, shut the tablet. I say, Spence, I got to explain something. He's like, what? I said, here's the deal. You're three outs away from seeing baseball history, the Mets being no hit. You could have that, or the Mets could get a hit. We're probably still going to lose, but what would you rather see happen? And he looks at me and says, I want the Mets to get a hit. And I said, that's my son! That's my son! And so when Juan Soto hit that meaningless home run, furthering his new nickname, I don't know if you guys were aware, Juan Solo. Yeah, I like that one. I didn't come up with it. It was an email or a Rico P, but still, it's pretty good. I'm going to use it from now on.
Right. And if he turns out to be great, I'm just honoring Han Solo.
That's right. Sure.
Savior.
I don't know who that is, but okay.
You don't know who Han Solo is?
I'm joking. I do. Jeez. He's a Star Trek character.
I'm going to get up and leave. Yeah. Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek character. But when Juan Solo hit that solo home run.
Star Wars, by the way.
Sure. Same thing. I was relieved and I was excited. And so was Spence. But what I didn't do 5 minutes later is give Gavin freaking Williams a standing ovation.
Okay, so what did Spence do? Did he follow your wife or did he follow you?
He's back on the tablet. We'll get to your calls next, 888-808-1019, including the issues facing the New York Mets. And yesterday's Yankee win was something that I thought Aaron Boone was going to seal his fate as being a former manager on. We'll get into what happened and if this leads to the Yankees now returning their season around. So there's a lot of baseball to get to, a lot of football to get to. Aaron Glenn was very clear on his plan for Saturday night. What should the Giants do?